Time for today's AM Minnesota program, and it's Pork Month. Yes, with everything going on, we haven't had the opportunity to celebrate the pork industry, not only here in Minnesota, but nationwide. And it is also tradition that Dave Preisler, Executive Director of the Minnesota Pork Producers Association, joins us to do a little bragging about the pork industry. And Dave, well, that's part of what we both like to do, is brag about agriculture, in your case, specifically the pork industry.
You know, we certainly do. I mean, this has been a challenging year for pork producers, but, you know, just like the rest of agriculture, we're starting to see some optimism now in the next or the last, you know, month and a half that we certainly hope can carry through to the future. But I think all of agriculture's had its challenges, but man, it's really nice to see some of the price jumps that have occurred, again, in all commodities over the last several weeks.
But yet the consumer is still winning because pork is still very reasonably priced at the meat counter in local grocery stores and meat markets.
You know, it is. You know, I was just in a grocery store this weekend where, boy, you could buy all sorts of fresh pork cuts for, you know, either just under $2 a pound or just a little over. Boy, that's a pretty good buy. You know, and I was looking at pork chops and roasts and so on. And so, you know, there's certainly enough product out there to meet consumer demands. And it's been interesting to watch how all of that has shifted, you know, as we've seen more and more product go to the retail side or grocery stores and not near as much as what used to into food service, you know, which ends up being your restaurant side of things, just as everyone has tried to adjust to COVID. So there's two real big stories from a pork standpoint. One is that our retail demand, so at grocery stores, has been really good. And has increased. And then the other thing that's increased are exports, especially over the last, you know, the kind of latter half of the summer, now leading into the fall, demand's been really good.
Well, let's back up and talk a little bit about what happened in the incredible adjustment that pretty much all of agriculture had to go through. And we saw it in all of livestock, whether it was beef or pork or dairy and milk. And we just had overnight a shift from schools and retail, like the restaurants, over to the grocery store. And so many processors, no matter what they were processing, they were designed to fit this market, and they couldn't just change gears overnight.
You're exactly right, Jerry. And, you know, and I really give them credit, quite honestly, for being able to change as quickly as they did. But, you know, if you start, you know, contrasting what would go on in a school, for example, where you've got, you know, milk that would be going into a small container versus, you know, something that may be happening in a gallon jug in retail. It's different processing, it's different equipment, it's different packaging, and different distribution. And so, you know, it really turned everyone on their head when you had this dramatic drop that occurred on the restaurant side of things, and then this corresponding increase that came on the retail or grocery store side. So it took a few weeks to work through some of that, and we saw some real extremes that happened during that time period in prices and availability. Now, we never ran out of food, and that just didn't happen, okay? But there were, in some cases, some choices that were not able to be met for short periods of time, and then things kind of straightened out after that. But it's amazing how, you know, how resilient our food system is to change in order to do that. You just don't take a box of bacon, for example, a 30-pound box of bacon that was designed to go to a restaurant, and automatically turn that over into 12 or 14 or 16-ounce packages that's going to go to a grocery store.
And that really is what the whole system had to figure out. And then there was some fear by consumers, too. Dave, I never thought I would see in my lifetime that a meat counter at a local grocery store here in Faribault, Minnesota, was picked over and there weren't a lot of choices. But yet you make a good point. Maybe you wanted ground pork or you wanted pork chops and you had to take a pork roast instead. There was still food there, but there weren't the choices. And I never thought I would see that in my lifetime in the United States, but I saw it last spring.
Well, what was certainly interesting, too, is just the choices people make, right? You know, whoever thought that toilet paper or paper towels would be something that would be coveted as much as it was. And then the other thing that occurred is that, you know, in other categories, you had like, shelf-stable things like soup and that sort of thing that became, some of the canned vegetables became short in supply for a short period of time. And then I think what you had go on is you had some kind of panic buying that occurred. And so if people had room in their freezer and they were going to buy meat, they just said, you know what, we're going to buy some extra so we don't have to go to the store as often. And we already see that behavior going on today, too, that remains, is that people don't go to the store as often. And so some of the storage needs that they have from a standpoint of in their refrigerator or their freezer and those sort of things have changed. Hopefully we get to better times. And as we deal with this virus, coming into 2021, but it's been a challenge. It's changed buyer habits. Things are normalizing, quite a bit now compared to where they were, but it was interesting to where people having to watch out for toilet paper. That's for sure. I don't think we ever would have projected that one out.
I never foresaw this coming. I think this is a classic example of the black swan that came in out of nowhere. No one could anticipate it. And being involved in farm media, but also a farmer myself, I just wanted to cry when it went by a great big ethanol plant, that no semis outside, no steam coming from the stacks. I heard a visit with one of my pork-producing neighbors who, he said the first week they were doing pretty well, and then their packer went down simply because people had not necessarily tested positive, but they'd been exposed. And in 1 week's time, this is two brothers and then a couple of their boys all involved in this one family operation, but pretty good size. They were 18 semi-loads of finished pigs behind going to their processor while feeder pigs were ready to leave the nursery to come into these barns. And they had to make the choice between euthanized finished pigs, nothing wrong with them, food for people, and there was no place to go. And you just wanted to cry.
Yeah, I think that was, without a doubt, I think some of the darkest times that have occurred in the pork industry in quite some time. And I could hear it in folks' voices when we talk with them. And if we met with them, you could just see it in their eyes, is that, first of all, it's something that the farm really, really couldn't control. And then the other piece is that we'd just never been put in that position before, where, you actually were having to destroy healthy animals because there was just plain not a place for them to go. Now, I will give farms an awful, awful lot of credit from a standpoint of they truly did everything they could do to either give animals away or sell them at a reduced price. They changed feed rations to slow them down. And it made a difference. They found alternative markets. It made a difference. It cost them a lot of money. But it made a difference from a standpoint of not having to put as many animals down as we maybe thought at one point in time. But unfortunately, in the end, that still was something that had to occur. But boy, they really didn't want to do it. I don't blame them. And they did everything in their power to avoid having to do that because they looked at it, too, as a waste of food. And, especially as we look at the times we're in today, that's just something that doesn't sit very well in people's hearts or their minds.
And just to put a perspective on it, I didn't ask this family because you don't know how, it was hedged or contracted or what. But I asked someone else in the industry, and they said, well, just normal market price, that would have been $500,000 in income. $500,000 it was going to go pay the feed bill, the vet bill, the labor bill, the payment on the building, whatever, and it disappeared into thin air. These are mind-boggling numbers that these families had to deal with.
Yeah, and I think that's what, even as we look at some of the programs that are out there to provide assistance to farms, is that, and with some of the caps on them, that it sounds like a lot of money, and it is a lot of money, but I don't think a lot of folks, if they haven't either been, the owner or an operator of a business, really understand sometimes the amount of money that's handled through businesses. And so if you take big chunks of that away, and it's just really hard to deal with, obviously, financially. And, traditionally, agriculture has been kind of on the lower margin side of things, too. And so that makes it even a tougher piece to take because, it just doesn't take much. And all of a sudden, you're upside down on things.
Well, and you mentioned that we've seen a nice price recovery, and the federal government with the CFAP round one, CFAP round two, the different help, it did help. It did make a difference, didn't it?
You know, it did. And I'd say the biggest difference or biggest help that it made were for smaller, moderate-sized farms, because there were caps that were built into that. And so I'd say the small and moderate-sized farms obviously were could stay, you know, under the cap or under the majority of the cap. So they were provided the most help. You know, I'd say depending on the farm, you know, it may have covered, you know, anywhere from 20 to 40% of the losses that farms incurred. And so that's certainly helpful. It did not and was not designed to make anybody whole. And but it certainly made a difference. I think we're seeing with banks, for example, that they're being pretty patient and have been pretty patient. Just letting a lot of these programs work through and see where they actually end up before making decisions with farms. Because we want to make sure that, you know, that patience is there. And because if there doesn't become assistance that becomes available, it certainly makes a big difference on the balance sheet. And also now as the markets have turned, you know, things look much, much better for 2021, and we're hopeful that they can stay there.
And then, too, some farmers got caught in like a double vice. We had the price crash to begin with, but then through no fault of their own, this operation, their processor went down early. This one maybe didn't or didn't very much. So it was just all helter-skelter, and it was just a case of the luck of the draw, whether you got hit with one freight train or two, basically.
It was, and there was no way really to predict, you know, which packing plants would be able to handle it better or worse. I think that where it hurt the most were the packers that were affected first. And the reason I say that is that it was the newest to them. I mean, they really didn't have guidelines to kind of work through. There was a lot of decisions that were being made from a federal or state standpoint that made it hard for them to know exactly what to do with it. And so the real beneficiaries of that information were the packers that went down or had problems with employee illness after those first groups, because then at least a playbook had been written. So they knew that they were going to make adjustments within the plant. They knew that they were going to provide and could access protective equipment, and also do spacing, put dividers in between people. Those first few plants didn't really have a chance with that. And so that's why it really rolled through and made those the most challenging. And those are the plants that were closed the longest.
Well, Dave, if you can stand by, we have to take a break for the markets. After the market break, we've got a lot more optimism to talk about with the price recovery and exports and demand domestically. And it sure is nice to be visiting now over when you and I talked maybe last March and April. We've sure come a long way. But stand by, Dave, then we'll continue with today's AM Minnesota program.